You guys are up.
Wi-Fi just went away.
Wi-Fi just went away? Yes. Did you turn off your VFM? Okay. Who wants to roll?
We introduce ourselves first, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Go.
Okay. Hi, welcome to the Facebook, one of the Facebook sessions. My name is Paul Toppins. I'm an attorney from Alabama. Folks, I have an interest in computers, copyright, trademark, privacy.
Okay, I'm Randall Schwartz, and most of you know who I am, so it's probably not you. Just Randall. There we go.
Wow, did you make that much of a presence at the parties last night?
Well, that too.
All right, I'm Cara Mikus. I'm a litigation specialist from Colorado. Not an attorney, but I do a lot of their work. I came in also to talk about the investigations that we can do and generally do through Facebook, MySpace, all that kind of stuff. So now we're also going to discuss the privacy issues and how to protect yourself. So.
Cool.
I'm the only one that has, I have an audio visual, so to speak.
Cool.
Very, very loose. And I'm going to set it on a loop because it just is some of the Facebook terms. Let me get it going. Go. Go, go, go. You can see I'm not using PowerPoint. Using the first thing, just so you know, is it Mark Zuckerberg, the head of Facebook?
That sounds right.
I think it's useful to know who that is. Well, I'm sorry. That's who.
Especially
that is.
For us.
Yeah. That's the guy that's the head CEO of Facebook, the quote-unquote creator, although that's really in dispute. And then the rest of these slides they're just going to play are parts of their privacy policy and parts of their terms of service, just a few selected things that you can read as everybody's talking, and hopefully when it flashes up, it'll distract you if we don't say things that are correct or grammatical. You know, you'll be distracted and you'll miss out. And we'll talk about some of this stuff, or at least I'll talk about some of this stuff as we go on.
So I was just reading. I was just reading.
Oh, okay, yeah. Sure.
I put together a really brief list of the changes that have taken place since Facebook's inception in 2005 through, I think the most recent change was April of this year. Initially, when Facebook started, they said that no personal information that you submitted would be available to any user of the website who does not belong to at least one of the groups specified by you in your privacy settings. So when it started, they pretty clear-cut about what they were releasing. In 2006, they changed these settings so that they were giving you control of your own information, and their default privacy settings would then limit the information displayed in your profile to your school, specified local area, and other reasonable community limitations that we tell you about. And we have to love the little lawyer speak in there that we tell you about, because it's the stuff that they're not telling you about that became so controversial of late. Facebook in 2007 decided to change it into at least one of the networks you allow to access the information through your privacy settings became to available to all users of Facebook, and you had to actually go in there and make the changes in your own default settings, whereas before you had to open it up, now you had to close it down. They have not been very wide-mouthed or, you know, communicative about the changes they were making. You had to be very proactive in protecting yourself, and you still have to be. Because they, you know, they'll kind of give you a little blurb of, we made this change, and pay attention, but the language that they use in there is somewhat confusing. November of 2009, they said, you can decide how much information you feel comfortable sharing and control how it's distributed through your privacy settings. Again, you had to shut everyone down. And I think that's about the point in time when they started to, whatever someone posted on your page became available on their page, and networks started blabbing, and everybody's information became available everywhere unless you were really, really very careful. Its most recent change is that when you connect with an application or a website, it's going to access general information about you. Your privacy settings are only going to control who can see the connection on your privacy page. So really, your privacy at this point is, don't expect it. You don't really have very much. So.
Facebook's point, I'll take the sort of the contrarian position up here, Dallo. I don't necessarily agree with that. Facebook's point would be it's a social networking site, and you've posted the information to connect with people. How could we be faulted if this is allowing this information to go out? Some of the terms will say that, you know, their explanation is, well, you know, that's what this site is designed to do. You should, it distracts me. don't need that. I don't need that distraction. You're supposed to put information, your contact name, your face, your name, your other things, so that people can find you. So we're just helping you out.
Okay, that might be their position, but really, do you want to be found by everyone? I don't know. I guess the real question is here, did everybody sign up on Facebook with their real name and home cities and all that kind of stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah? Has it become a little bit of a concern for you now at all?
Location.
Yeah, I mean, because now it's you can go in there and it'll tell you where you've logged in from last if you haven't turned that setting off. I mean, well, not that.
What? It does what? What?
They changed it. You didn't get that one?
I don't know. Let's check that setting out.
Your friends can log you in.
Exactly. Yeah. But you have to, you can, right, if you can go in and turn that off, but you have to know that it's actually taking place. And make the physical adjustment. So. Yeah. I know I did it one night, and I was just like, "Wow, this is kind of, it's hidden."
Because Facebook has, once again, I'll do the contrarian side. Facebook has such scrutiny on it. At least you could do a quick Google search and find out all the ways you need to turn it off. That's not true for a lot of other sites out there because Facebook isn't the only one doing this. I mean, I was reading something about someone. And I can't remember which particular thing was following them, but they got a pop-up ad for some boots or something from Nordstrom's, and it just followed them from web page to web page to web page. And I don't know, they all had DoubleClick or some other cookie on their site on their machine that alerted them. So it's that intrusiveness, I think, is sort of inevitable, and the question is what can be done to limit it. I generally take a sort of a libertarian position on most things, but I'll be contrarian about that. I think that this is a situation in which some government regulation or a government statute or something that maybe a statute that would empower people to bring a lawsuit for minimal damages or file some action or make a complaint to the FTC or their state's attorney general would be something that could help rein in some of the practices that there might be a consensus about or that are abusive.
One of the things we're also seeing, or one of the things I'm also observing a lot, is there's this real interesting culture shift that might be generational, might just be depending on, what's that ringing coming from? Can you cut down? I'm hearing feedback, and it's a little bit weird.
It's a generational thing.
It's a generational thing, right,
I'm hearing
yeah.
the ringing, but most people are
I'm
off.
Hearing ringing, okay. That, you know, I kind of straddle for some reason because I grew up on computers, so I also grew up being as social as I could be on computers. I tweet all the time. I update my status on Facebook. I check in on Yelp and everything else because I'm already a public figure. I'm already wanting to be public, but I can really see that for some people, or details like what restaurant they ate lunch at is something that maybe they want a few of their friends to know, but not like the world. I can see that would really be a problem, and I think so. That's one issue. Is like there's different attitudes people have about people knowing about what they do. The other issue, particularly about Facebook, though, is the myriad of different settings that seem to be changing weekly. Like I didn't know there was a setting that we just talked about. I went, oh yeah, there is a setting for that. So it's trying to get your hand around that, trying to get your head around that about how to actually, you know, control what you want to reveal. And there's probably another axis to the issue too, and we'll see if I can come at it from all sides as well. That until you've been burned, you don't know what burning is like. You know, we're seeing this a lot with like kids that are going out into the job market and they've posted all their details about all the partying they've done on Facebook, and then the employers are now Googling for this stuff, finding this stuff there, and again, you don't know it's bad until you've been burned once, at least.
Yeah, and I'm sure Kara can talk more about that, but anytime I do anything with anybody these days, I do a Google search on them.
Right.
And I was on another session of something else, and I was talking about how I was talking to my pet sitter, who's looking after our dogs and cats and gerbils this weekend. When we found her, I did a Google search, and she has a Twitter page and Facebook page and MySpace page, you know. And so I started reading, and I got hooked on reading her Twitter posts. And I feel weird. I didn't tell her I was following her Twitter posts, but I do it sort of to check in to see, oh, she's still around, she's okay, she's in town. She'll be available Labor Day weekend. But you can build a profile of this person. I can build a profile. I've got a very more rounded view of what her life is like. And I feel like I'm a voyeur. It just is, but I can't stop myself.
There are addiction clinics for stuff like that. Yeah. Right.
Now, I don't have a Facebook page. I do have a Twitter page I set up a few weeks ago, just so I could communicate with my wife and daughter through my cell phone, with just punching in one number. The tweets are protected, so you can't see it. And I did use my real name until I realized you don't have to. I wish I hadn't. Because it's out there now forever, you know, even though they can't see the tweets. But I'm a different, it's a generational thing for me. I don't have no desire to post information, especially since I know that I get on there and use information that I find about other people to form judgments about those people. And I just assume there's a limited amount of things out there about me. I can't control all of it. This now, I think DragonCon probably has added another little piece if you wanted to examine me. I would just assume not. I'm getting back to the point I was trying to make. Talking to my pet sitter about it, and she said, "Well, yeah, it's out there. My life's, you know, sort of an open book. You know, I don't worry about pictures of her when she was in a pageant in, you know, middle school or elementary school." It's just a different attitude. I mean, I'd be going, "Ah, I don't want to have a picture of me out there, you know, when I was 15 or 14 or 13."
Or if you did, you'd like to be able to control who sees it.
Oh, sure. I would love to do that. Love to do that.
It's interesting that you mentioned voyeurism. The online forums have been defined as forums for self-expression, communication, hobbyists, and then they include, some might say, voyeurism. And then they get into the whole little bit of cyber-stalking, which is always fun. Your information being out there makes it very easy for people like me to go in, and people like him, and do exactly that. We search for expert witness information on there, and if I can find some damning information on, you know, the expert witness on the other side of a case through any of this, well, you know, I've used that to discredit him. And certainly if you can do that in, you know, my line of work, you can probably do it anywhere. So
it was somebody that was a government official that was doing something with one of my clients, and I went and did a search, and they had all these reviews they had done, and I'm pretty sure it was, you know, I connected it to them, of Nazi war memorabilia. Now, I don't know what that adds to my understanding of this official, but it adds a little. So when I'm dealing with him on behalf of my client, I know that they've got at least a passion for World War II and that stuff. I mean, it may be great, and maybe I'll be able to work it into the conversation somehow, but quite frankly, I'm a little afraid to, because I don't know what the response would be. But it's one of those little odd things that you post. Once you posted it, it's there, and it's a piece of your history, you know, forever.
I think we've got the general tone of the conversation. We only have an hour left, so we should probably start taking questions.
Sure.
Anybody have questions, any concerns? There's a microphone runner.
Somebody. Well, let's talk about the right here. My question is about the user legal statements, the iterations for Facebook. Where exactly might we find those? 2006, 2007.
I found them by going back and doing a search on Facebook, actually.
Well, I'm not
Facebook.
On Facebook.
No, I didn't do the search on Facebook itself. I searched Facebook, like on, I think it was Google, or it might have even been Wiki.
Do an advanced search under Google and just say search under the domain facebook.com. Or just do a Google search and you'll find them.
Because I don't think Facebook necessarily has all of their changes put up within the site so that you can go back and see them listed and go, well, you started with this really kind of hardline stance and now you've gone all the way down here. And we know what's driving that. I mean, the money behind all the data mining is what's the initial force driving this. But in the meantime, you know, there you are.
Is it available on archive.org? Perhaps?
I'm sure might be, or the Wayback Machine or something like that.
I just did a Google search, and Mashable actually had an article last week on Facebook privacy missteps in the form of an infographic. So if you want it in simplified form, but you're probably talking about the actual text. No, it's on Twit Toaster or something. That's our first Googled up here. Let's see if it comes up.
I understand that Facebook has Youth Protection Acts, or implies Youth Protection Acts, and best to protect the juvenile users' privacy and stuff. How does that make sense?
Well, I looked at that because I wasn't familiar with the all the details of COPPA. The Children's Online Privacy Protection Act and the FTC's privacy protection rule. I kept seeing these things in Facebook's things saying, if you are 13, under 13, then blah, blah, blah. And I was trying, 13, what in the world did they get that number for? You know, is that a new Hogwarts age of maturity or, you know, when you become an adult? Or, but it's the act, the 1998 Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, 15 USC 6501 et sec, requires the FTC to come up with a rule. And the rule the FTC came up with is at 16 CFR, part 3312, is that you cannot have, cannot collect personal information about someone under age 13, name, address, anything that allows somebody to identify them. And that's what Facebook says that they comply with. When you sign on, I'm sure it asks you, are you 13 and under? And, you know, goes through that little sequence. This is distracting me. I'm going to have to stop
this. As I understand it, Facebook said that they're not going to allow data mining to take place for individuals that have signed up as under 18. I would never recommend that anyone go back in and sign up for being an underage person, but it does allow you greater privacy control.
Yeah, that's a good thought.
There are parts of me that are under 18.
Yeah, that's right. Your parts of me still a 13-year-old, that's for sure.
Does that make you subpoena-proof?
No, I doubt it. But my question is, what do you do with the 14 through 18, 19, 20, 21-year-old? Those folks can't enter into contracts by themselves, or except for necessities in the general contract law. If this thing that Facebook has, this agreement that you, this term of use, is it EULA, that you click on, is a contract, can you really bind to those people? Do they have a ground? And I suspect you'll see something about that.
Can those people legally bind themselves to that?
No, you can't.
They can't use the site without agreeing to the EULA.
Yeah. But you can't, unless it's a necessity, the law says if you're below the age of majority, whatever it is, it varies from state to state, you cannot enter into a contract. You know, necessity would be you buy food, or, you know, a contract, you know, something you have to have. Well, they say, well, that's a necessity. We're not going to penalize the person selling it to you just because you're underage, you know, because that hurts you, hurts the kid. But going out and signing up onto Facebook is a necessity? Yeah, I don't think any judge, because they don't understand.
My 15-year-old cousin would disagree.
I know they would, but the judges wouldn't understand it. They wouldn't, you know, at this stage. But I agree with that. So let me just there's a hand up, toss out. Facebook, their current terms of use are better because of the scrutiny that's been placed on them and the heat they've gotten. They had a provision that says you own all your stuff that you post. You know, if it goes on somebody else's site, we can't control that, but if you own all your stuff until you delete your account, and then we can use it until you delete your account. They took that away, the until you delete your account bit, 6 months, a year ago, and they got a lot of heat for it, so they put it back. At least it was in the one I just downloaded a little while ago, dated August 25th. That's a lot more protective than a lot of sites I see, where basically if you post something, we can use it any way we want. You give us a license to use it forever. If everybody will take their Dragon Con badge and read the back, how many people have read the back first? Oh, God. You tell I'm at Dragon Con. Well, how many people read the back and said, wait a minute, I'm not going to agree to all this?
Too late.
But yeah, I figure what they do is they have, what they do is you go through the line, which we all go through. You get up to the front and they give you the badge and you look at it and go, hold it, wait a minute. This says that you permit DragonCon and your designees for any and all purposes to use my name, voice, likeness, and all reproductions in any form, in any media, now and hereafter known in perpetuity. I can't agree to that. I'm sorry. They go, well, you got to go back to the end of the line and come back in through again to get your money back. You'd be like, okay, never mind. I'll give you that license. So everybody does it. It's just, and this is, you know, this is a little overbroad. But the reality is they're not going to subtly make, you know, you the picture of Dragon Con, I would doubt. They're not going to suddenly, you're going to be seen in all their advertisements. You'll be on the badge next year. That'd be overreaching a bit from that kind of a license that they've given. But
the picture of the guy passed out at the party. And there's probably one running around.
Yeah, this is more to protect them than to from accidental or inadvertent uses than for them actually to go out and make money off of your image and name and stuff.
More questions?
Does everybody here use Facebook? Anybody here not use Facebook?
Wow. Did you come because you were concerned about it or wanted to learn about it? Or?
I have students who use it, so that's my concern.
Yeah, I have a daughter that wants to use it, but and she's over 13 now, so.
She's already using it.
I don't know. She's pretty private. She's a little like me. She's a little bit, I don't want a photo or information out there. So.
One of the things that is interesting is kind of the view on privacy itself. Like what one person considers to be private may not necessarily be considered private by another person. Privacy in and of itself is somewhat of a paradoxical nature. You know, because this person may say, no, I absolutely cannot have that out there. Another person doesn't care. Another thing is, too, it's quite often that people communicate very personal details about themselves and situations that are going on in their life without even thinking about where that information is going because you're engaged in, you know, a brief blog with someone or, you know, IMs or what have you going back and forth. But yet, at the same time, you're still giving away very private information. So.
In another session I was talking about, I'm cautious, but I do post to things. I mean, Randall was talking about the times, years he's been doing this and his social nature and being on the internet computers. I mean, I'm old CompuServe posting to, what do we call them? Bulletin boards.
Yeah,
modems. Right. Happy when I got a 56K modem. Woo-wee. Posted all these things for years. And some of that stuff actually is still out there. Some of that CompuServe stuff goes under my name. I've found with Google searches talking about computer programming. It's nothing exciting. Nothing exciting to most people. But now I use a screen name generally if I post something. And in this earlier session, I was saying I'm waiting for the day because that screen name I have it tied to a Yahoo account that I don't use anything other than commerce, buying stuff or posting things. But I know because I've used it for commerce and had to give my real name or a credit card information to my address, the day is coming when that screen name will be connected to me through a simple search. I mean, it's just inevitable. That is going to happen. And then all of a sudden, all of those postings I've made on different forums will be searchable and can be tied to me. So, I mean, I keep that in the back of my mind. You know, I don't want to go on any kind of crazy rant that, you know, will come back to somebody use against me in some way. Or I'd be embarrassed about either one.
One thing for maybe you to keep in mind for your students is that back in February 2006, there was a 16-year-old boy in Colorado that got arrested for juvenile possession of a firearm after the police saw pictures of that posted on MySpace, you know, posing with handguns and things like that. So criminal activity, I think, even for people under the age of 18 is not going to be protected just because you're under 18. So something to think, you know, remind those kids.
And I'm sure the police use it as an investigatory tool all the time. And when they're, you know, we have Google attempting to recognize images and tie them to things and identify them. That's coming. We're going to get moving towards that direction. When they get software that the police, local police department can use, can search for certain images, they're going to put it in and somebody's going to start running programs to look for guns, to look for things that look like bombs. And just, they'll have their computer information officer whose job each day is to look through what's been dumped locally from, you know, computers that have local IP addresses. You know, it's just Big Brother is is coming just by the nature of technology.
Website, very similar to that called TenEye.
Okay. TenEye, T-E-N?
T-I-N.
TenEye, oh, T-I-N. Okay. I have to look at that.
Yeah.
Maybe that's something good for me.
So you guys have spoken a lot on the privacy implications of Facebook and the risks you're taking by putting your information out there. Where's the balance? Where's the balance? What can you do to better protect your information, but be able to still communicate with your friends and family or whatever you have on Facebook, on, you know, whatever online services you're using, and still protect yourself from leaking information outside of the obvious due diligence?
I don't think we've found the solution yet, and I don't think Facebook has an interest necessarily in making it easy for us to find that solution, because they get benefit from having you spread everything you have everywhere. I was just looking at an infographic of the default settings over the time has become more and more generous. The default settings are more generous. It's obviously to Facebook's advantage to have you be able to find out things about your friends, because it'll make you want to sign up and participate.
Right.
And so
But I'm okay with my friends knowing stuff about me. They're my friends.
Right.
I have an idealized amount of information. You know, I have an ideal amount of information I would like to share with my friends or certain subsets
but see,
thereof.
You're discounting that this is a better world that we're looking for. We're all your friends, so we all should know about you. It's a utopia.
The graphic sounds interesting.
Yeah, here, look. Can you bring that up?
Yeah, here.
I have to get my adapter cable.
Okay. I can think of is you talk to your friends on the telephone, you know, or you...
talk on phone.
Yeah, I know. It's a strange
concept. You know those little things that we all carry around just to surf the web now?
Oh,
yeah.
Right. Yeah, it's... I don't know. Yeah, I don't think there is a good solution. If it's out there, it's in a database, it's available.
There's someone analyzing it for something.
It can, yeah, somebody analyzing it for money. You know, that's the big driver for all this stuff is making a profit, making a buck. But in the background is... you know, the government thinking, well, you know, there's some information that we might be able to use too. And so with subpoenas and other things, or with just a letter from the FBI, we discovered they can send one of their...
The government is starting to understand the internet a little more. It's been out there long enough, they now have a clue.
Well, because they have people that are... Yeah.
I don't think they're quite there yet.
Yeah, no.
They have a clue.
He probably needs to restart. Would Kevin go again?
Do you need
can
he,
can you connect him to...
Yep.
Oh, are you?
I can.
Okay, press the button.
Sure. It timed down. It went to sleep.
There we go. Ta-da.
Oh, that was easy. You just need to push it.
Oh, push the button that downloads everything off his hard drive, too, while you're at it. Yeah.
It's warming up, right?
Yeah, it's warming up.
There you go.
So you can't read the words there, but around the outside it says like name, picture, demographic, extended profile data, friends, networks, wall posts, and photos, and there's a grayed out one called likes because they didn't have that in 2005. And from inside out, it's you, friends, network, all Facebook users, the entire internet. So you can see in 2005 it was actually quite narrow. And this is just the default settings now. And then we get 2006, see it gets a little bit bigger. 2007. A little bit more default. All Facebook users for things like your name and picture and the networks you're in as the default. 2009 December. So, and 2010 April. That's it, yeah. So, quite a change. Let's compare that back with the first one again. Yeah, it's that's pretty revealing, actually.
But the thing is, they're not going to get much pushback. I mean, we're familiar with it because we're at Dragon Con, you know. We read these things. We pay attention to it. I mean, we, the group, all our friends here. I don't know that they've had much of a ripple with people. I'd be curious to see how many people went in and changed their privacy settings when it became incumbent on them to do so to protect themselves. I bet it's a tiny fraction. So make the change. Goes out there, increases their chances of, you know, linking an ad or doing something, making some more money, and it just rolls on.
I've changed all my settings to my friends only, all the way down the line in all the categories, and I'm still getting people requesting as a friend outside my circle. How does that happen?
Well, I think it's based on the whole information sharing that's going on. You post something on your friend's wall, and you are visible to your friend's friends or your friend's whomever.
See, that's the loophole.
Right. Well, and so you really, the most wise way to go about it, I would say, is just to remember that you don't have any real expectation of privacy. If there's something that you don't want out there, don't put it out there. I mean, there's just no real other way to protect
That's
yourself.
Why I still use email.
Oh, we don't have much privacy there either, but yeah.
Are your friends now? Are they going to be your friends later?
Yeah. One would hope, but
I'd like to think so.
Some, you know, people get into disagreements all the time, and they can be vindictive.
This isn't a question so much as just a comment. I'm a university professor, and several years ago, in my discipline, in my area, there was a lot of talk about setting up groups on Facebook for our classes, so that it would be a way for the students who are enrolled in the class to join Facebook, to engage in these kinds of conversations, and more importantly for my area, which is in writing studies, for students to share drafts of papers with one another. Recently, especially with all of these privacy issues, you don't see virtually nobody in university communities advocating setting up groups for their classes, largely because they're so afraid that the papers and product that these students are posting online are going to become immediately accessible to virtually anybody who can search that area. So there's a real intellectual property concern that's now sort of moving people away from this as a classroom tool.
Sure. And Facebook has the right to use it. As long as it's up there, at least according to their current terms.
I can speak to that as well, that we've migrated to Blackboard so that it's proprietary and password protected, so that it's controlled within the system. Yeah. That's happening already.
Okay. Did you have a question? Are you going to comment?
Yeah. No, it was just kind of a statement, you know, you said earlier about, you know, are your friends going to be your friends now? Are they going to be one of the things that I recently divorced. And it was very difficult to remove my ex from everything, from Gmail, from Facebook, from to everything. Every time we turn around, we're tripping over each other, and we really don't want to do that. So, you know, how do you even, Facebook makes it impossible to break up, divorce, just not be friends anymore.
The witness protection program, I think, is the...
I'm considering that.
I think the girl right up in the middle had a question earlier.
Here?
Yeah.
Well, I just wanted to comment. I have been using Facebook since it was allowed at my university that I've now graduated from. And at that time, it was only university students. And as soon as it opened up to everybody else, it was just, that's when the problems really seemed to start. And I know me and a lot of other friends were really against that. And I know a lot of people were against that. And I think that's kind of the big thing here, is because now everybody has access. And before it was just, hey, I want to connect with the person at the dorm, you know, down the street.
When the latest set of controversies hit, I read something about someone advocating, we need an open source Facebook. We need an open source Facebook. So, you know, something the user would be in control of. And I suspect that that possibility will emerge. But once again, it's going to be a fraction of the user base. You know, most people don't know of the issues or the problems. It's just they get ads, they get pop-up. You know, they have pop-ups. They don't even know how to stop that. They're just going to take it. And the people that will self-select themselves out of the Facebook era, you know, move to something else, will be just the small percentage of folks, and you'll be trying to convince others, hey, you need to, don't go to Facebook to find me, go to whatever it is.
Part of the problem with an open source Facebook would be them being able to properly monetize it.
You got to be able to afford to run the website. You know, someone's got to pay the bills, someone's got to pay for the piano.
Twitter doesn't have any, I heard them say they don't even have a business plan. Twitter doesn't make any money, does it? I mean, how do they?
I think Twitter's business plan is to get bought out by somebody.
Okay. That's not a bad business plan in the internet.
There is a project to develop a Open source, yeah.
Yeah. Isn't the internet amazing? Isn't the internet amazing? You can find stuff everything there.
But the point I'm making is that Facebook monetizes itself by doing these questionable things. And that's kind of the problem.
Well, the question...
Being able to pay for the servers one day on the open source version.
Questionable in the sense that they take your information and they try to connect it to things that you might be interested in. But then I'd be pressed to think of any commercial website that doesn't do that kind of thing, from cookies to everything else. You can't, for a while I turned all cookies off on my browser. You just can't search. I use NoScript and Firefox to not load scripts. So that means I'm always constantly saying, okay, I'll do this, temporarily do the scripts for this page, temporarily do the scripts for this page. Because you can't run it without JavaScript either.
Okay, my thing is, I mean, we all say Facebook does, Facebook that, you know, it does this, everything wrong. But compared to some of the other, you know, options out there, like MySpace, to me, it's a lot better than MySpace, at least, you know, because you hear all the time about how they're letting sexual predators, you know, and all this bullying, social bullying that's going on, and these, you know, poor teenagers are getting stuck into all of these things. Because it's more open, because there's more you can do, you know, you can customize your profile a lot more with all these coding options and everything else. Like, I don't know.
Well, it is one thing, yeah. MySpace allows arbitrary HTML on your pages, and Facebook at least is smart enough not to do that. It's simply a data redistribution system, a very efficient one, but that's all it's doing. So there's some advantages to that. But it's also a matter of time. I mean, MySpace has been around, what, another 5 years before Facebook got started, so it could be just a matter of time that'll start showing up in Facebook somehow, if it isn't already.
I don't know that they necessarily... I think they have tried to limit it somewhat, MySpace I'm speaking of. I mean, when that incident happened involving that younger girl, the older woman created some fake profile and the younger girl got very upset over whatever took place and killed herself. MySpace did try to bring suit against the lady who did that, and they lost it. So,
on the topic of cyberbullying, that happens no matter where you're at, whether you're in a forum, whether you're on Craigslist, whether you're on MySpace or Facebook. And a lot of the problem with, like, Facebook is, you know, people just click through anybody who requests to be a friend. Oh, okay, you must know me from somebody's friend of a friend, and I'll meet you at a party eventually. But you may not. They may be just a fake profile that's doing it for marketing. So just be cautious of who you are friends with.
I was surprised on the Twitter accounts that I just set up just to do this communication, primarily here at DragonCon, I got a friend request like that,
yep.
But it was porn. You know, it was, I'm setting this up for my daughter. Hmm?
A poor friend?
Poor friend?
You said poor, right?
Porn.
Oh, porn.
Not poor. Rich.
Okay.
But I just was amazed that they, because you have to key in, you know, they have the little blurred letters and stuff. I was just amazed at how quickly they could, you know, find a new user and get on before I even had a chance myself to add in, you know, somebody.
Twitter's API allows a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
And once an account's created,
it can be posted to with no, you know, with no real trouble. And if you want to see something really interesting, go make a Twitter and post something about social marketing. Uh-huh. See how many friends requests you get in like 10 minutes.
Right, exactly.
It's ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a little scary. What's going on behind the scenes that most users don't have a clue about? You know, like the API don't have a clue about what Twitter has set out there for others to plug into and get information from.
Also, another thing with Twitter is, like on my phone, I've got an app and it lets me search for nearby tweets, and I can actually see where people are when they tweet. On a map, and you can just go to wherever they are.
Don't you have to turn on the location feature of that?
If you've got the location features on your phone, I haven't found in the settings for that where I can just turn it off for myself.
You've turned it on at some point because it is disabled by default.
Right.
Your phone may have turned it on, the app on the phone.
Your app may have turned it on, but something turned it on for you because it is
disabled by default. That's one thing you can say it's really good about Twitter.
And everybody's
now.
Moving towards
for those, now.
Everybody's moving towards those location things. I mean, Google does it now, or once with Latitude, and there's a bunch of others that, you know, now that we can tell where we are by the GPS or the, you know, whatever the signals, they want to seize on that, because then they can tailor advertising. So we'd get an ad to, you know, to go over to one of the restaurants around here if we just happened to walk in the area.
Yeah, there's definitely a setting. But it's on the web. It probably wouldn't be accessible through your application. But I have mine on, of course. I don't care. I share everything. But, I was careful to scroll off my private email address a few times.
I could see, you know, you use Twitter, I assume, for, you know, for business. You know, you want a presence out there.
Yeah,
you want a presence on the web.
It's one of the many ways to let people know what I'm doing and where I'm doing it, because that's advantageous to me and in my business and my social life.
It seems like there should be
able
to make a distinction between, I'm using this for a business account, I'm using this for a personal account, for MySpace and others, to say, personal, we treat it one way. Business, we treat it another way. Of course, I don't think anybody, business or personal, really wants to get bombarded with, you know, ads or anything else that, you know, would chew up time and space and your screen. And
yeah, I personally don't have the time all day long to give somebody an update on what I'm doing every 20 minutes. So,
so you just do it once an hour.
I don't have time for that either. Well,
I'm not that interesting for people to want to know what I'm doing every 20 minutes or an hour.
Yeah, we're generally reading case law.
More case law again.
Right.
More questions? Questions? Comments? Over here?
I just have a couple of comments.
Yeah?
I've been using Facebook since the day it launched. I was at Harvard, but it was available for all college networks. At the time, I was very skeptical about what I put up on Facebook, but since then, their privacy settings aside, the EULA, what they have rights to use my information, that all aside, there are the privacy controls to control who can see your information, who cannot. I have become really comfortable putting stuff up there and being able to sort people in different lists, coworkers, friends I no longer talk to, but they still want to keep in touch, and friends I talk to on usual basis, 10 to 15 people who can see all my information, and people who can send me friend requests from friends of friends. I even have that disabled, like you were talking earlier, you can disable that where friends of your friends cannot see you or send you friend requests. And for Twitter, however, there are other uses just besides marketing and just, you know, communicating, hey, I just made a toast or whatever. I use it for as a chat room on the phone to communicate with a lot of friends, organize an event. Hey, we're going to go out to this club at this time tonight. And that way it's just a lot easier to just be able to work around with people with that, you know, instead of having to text 10, 15 people at once and then respond to each one of them. I just think that's a cool feature a lot of people don't realize, that these services do have a lot of potential as long as you're careful. You just use some common sense. And the whole location thing, just opt out of that. That's a bad, in my opinion, that is just a very, very, very bad idea for let people know where you are.
Yeah. I think
that's a personal decision too, though, because I don't mind. I actually like the fact that people know I'm going to be at a particular restaurant or bar, because if they want to drop by to say hello, it works for me. But I'm also a public figure. I'm somebody, you know, has a following from my books and my podcasts, where I really do kind of want that sort of interaction and connection. And you may not be. And I think you got at a point that was interesting, which is that if you're careful, you can manage all this. Facebook's dials and settings are kind of weird to manipulate, and they change them every week. But you can, as a person of reasonable intelligence, do this. What I'm more worried about are the people that don't take the consideration time that you took to figure out how to make the settings work, or don't know that there are settings to even to be adjusted. So that's a much bigger concern.
That's correct. I just turned the comment. I heard there was a lawsuit against Facebook about making these privacy controls more obvious to users, where they just make everything default opt-in instead of, opt-out instead of opt-in. Any thoughts on that? I'm not even sure if it's a real lawsuit. I just read it online that might have
Canada, been. Jennifer Stoddard, Canada's privacy commissioner, did something about that. I mean, I've read about that. There may actually be lawsuits too. I wouldn't be surprised. But she was after the changes last November or whatever they last were saying, was trying to advocate, at least for Canada, that it violated Canada's privacy laws and that you needed to have it as an opt-in versus an opt-out. I'm sure it violates Europeans' privacy laws too. What I have heard of the shorthand is that, oversimplification perhaps, but the Europeans generally trust their government with not violating their rights so much. When we were with the flip, we don't trust the government very much. But Europeans don't trust companies and our corporations, and they want limits on what corporations can do. Whereas here, we want the government to get involved, but corporations leave to the judicial system or to the free market or whatever. But I agree, but the use of Twitter, I mean, that's why I set it up, so I could send one email and it would go to a bunch of different places, and so we could coordinate where we were and what we were doing, and without having to add in a bunch of different addresses or try to create a mailing list of names.
So I guess it could be argued that in the future, this is how people are going to interact and this is how people are going to connect with each other. Like you said, if you're careful, you can kind of manage the flow of information. So what can we do, bottom line, to kind of protect ourselves and our privacy, other than just use a cell phone, which seems a little like archaic today?
Almost, right. You know,
we're advocating using a cell phone to protect our privacy. Of course, is everybody going to eavesdrop on cell phones? Right.
I don't know that there's an absolute way that you can have any great expectation of privacy on here, because even the opt-out options on Facebook are not true opt-out options, because all the Facebook pages that you connect to are owned publicly by Facebook, and they state that. So, I mean, you can click on that little button to opt out of that so that you can express yourself on the profile without links, but what you say still gets up there regardless of whether there's a link to you or not.
So we should we end up boycotting this kind of organization such as Facebook, or should we just kind of manage our information a little better?
Yeah, I don't think that it's necessary to maybe boycott, but it's like I said, just don't have any great expectation of privacy. I wouldn't go out there and make some comments that are going to come back and bite you later, you know?
We discussed this in another session too. There's a guy that you may be able to pull up that I know about that he had an Arab sounding name, or he was an Arab name, and he got on a no-fly list, and they were suspicious of him for being a terrorist, so he thought, to hell with it. And he's an artist someplace, and so he thought, I'm going to post everything that I do all the time on the internet. And so he takes a picture of himself every few seconds, and you know, it's up there all the time. He's just, my life is now a totally open book. It's the Truman Show, but by the victim, or the person who's the focus of it. You could argue that, as some of the CEOs of some of these companies say, you know Scott McNeely of what was his son said, you know, you don't have privacy anymore. Get over it. Eric Schmidt recently, the CEO of Google, of the do no evil Google, said, if you have something you don't want known, you shouldn't be doing it in the first place. Oh, yeah, okay.
I totally agree with that.
Hmm?
I totally agree with that.
Well, but we all do things that we don't want known.
But still, like, I mean, if you want to do something that it's like you consider it privately, then just don't do it, don't post it, or just do it and do not post it, or do not let anyone see you. So,
what's,
I mean, we are actually in a digital area, so, and we're going to be beyond this.
Tell that to Michael Phelps.
Yeah, the question would be, is it possible these days to do something, unless you're in a closed room by yourself, which are the things you do in a closed room by yourself, you don't want known, but you're not going to have...
It's a later panel.
Yeah, that's right. That's one of the after-hour panels. Right.
Yep. No, I was just going to say, nobody's mentioned yet, I think they're in the process of looking into or passing a law in Germany about how your boss, companies will not be able to... looking, I guess, technically deny you a job because of something you have posted online.
Yeah, they won't be able to use it.
Same way that, you know, they can't deny you a job for some being part of some minority group now, but you still don't get the job.
It'd be tough. That'd be a tough one to enforce. I don't know I'd like to see them try. I mean, here, this country tried something like that. They just would say, "Well, we didn't see your Facebook page. We just don't like you." Yeah.
Yeah. One of the things too, you're definitely not immune if you don't have a Facebook account. I'm a director at a hospital chain, and we're always re-educating and reprimanding maybe nurses for having conversations on Facebook about patients.
No,
we have to remind them that we have to remind them that's illegal.
So,
just not having a Facebook account definitely doesn't make you immune.
Right. That's the scary thing too. Things that you do that you are careful about, but other people know about or do something about, they can put it out there.
I don't know if you feel comfortable doing this, but if you do, I'm wondering if you might speculate about the relationship between the telecom companies and Facebook interaction, and what I mean in the future. And what I mean by that is, for anybody who's interested, this is slightly off topic, but you can see already on Frontline on PBS the documentary that shows exactly what is happening with your telephone calls. And the NSA, the box that is in San Francisco, the box that is in several major cities with all the telecom companies. You can see, we're not talking about, you know, left-wing paranoia, we're talking about Frontline. So you can check that out. I'm wondering if you might speak to the relationship between social networking sites and those sorts of concerns, not only right now for what say, governments might be doing, which is a little off topic, but what happens when corporate entities start to be able to gain access to what the NSA already has? So that if you might speculate about that. Thanks.
So you mean the angle of the NSA would be a mole in the middle of Facebook, or that Facebook has the same kind of information the NSA has and could use it to their private corporate advantage?
Well, the NSA is grabbing everything.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Access. So what I'm wondering about is what the legal structures are in place for preventing the corporations to eventually be able to liaise with any kind of government entity like that and gain access to material.
They already are.
Yeah, but I don't think they'll have to, but I think they'll have that information. I think we're reaching a point where there's going to be a critical mass where the system wakes up and all of a sudden all this data that we've got
Skynet.
Going to be Skynet. I was thinking of Moon as a Harsh Mistress, but all that stuff, the technology will get to the point, the computing power will get to the point where all your credit card purchases and phone calls and things, they'll be able to zoop, gather it all up and create this profile of you. When I was doing a research for another panel, there was somebody quoted that says, look, if we have your birth date, your gender, and your driver's license number, something, one other piece of information.
State you were born in.
Maybe it was, but it was something, you know, things you wouldn't think about as being necessarily controversial. We have those three pieces. We can identify you 87% of the time. Maybe it's your IP address.
What were the things?
Yeah.
What were the
your birth date, your gender, and maybe I think your IP. Where you're connecting to the internet from? We can identify you 87% of the time. From the data, the information that's out there, we can tie that to, you know, to whatever you are.
87%. I find that difficult to believe.
Zip codes.
Okay.
Zip code was the last one.
Zip code? Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Zip code.
Yeah, that
one's. Yeah.
Zip code's a little more believable than IP, even just because if you consider institutional internet access.
But 87% of the time.
IP for 1,000 users.
I know, but yeah, but a lot of the, they get my zip code almost from my IP address or through my cable company, you know.
Geolocation, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm good at Google.
Clearly.
My Google foo is excessive.
Google has you stored and all what you want to look for.
That's why it comes up first.
Google's listening, yeah. And so they figure,
Thank you, Google.
What you want to hear.
Yes.
And that's you know, how do you can't escape from that.
Have you guys been to Spokio? I might be preaching to the choir here, but Spokio.com, Spokeo.com.
We'll be there in a moment.
Is that a bad thing?
So those of you who know it, you need to go in there and you need to take yourself out of their database.
It's ugly.
Spokio,
Spokio.com.
Okay. Ooh, not your grandma's phone book.
Before I took myself out of there, I zoomed in on my house on the map just by putting my name in there.
Oh,
I had my address, my phone number.
Yeah.
You own your house?
Old phone numbers.
You own your house?
Yeah,
one of them's right.
I get that.
Your deed is
public
information.
Yeah.
Yeah, mortgages and things.
But what this does is
tax records.
No,
that's not me.
It aggregates data from many different places. It gives you my household income. You can't get that off of the
what's
that? Property appraisals. You might
you can, you can make
I'm in Texas. Look at that.
You can see your household income by looking through.
My point is this does it for you. This does it for the average.
Right. What I'm saying is the day-to-day of the aggregator is all coming. You know, when are the multiple aggregators, and they'll be able to pull that. There's one called a...
Yep, that's me. Wow, that's my house. There's the front. You can't see it on that screen, but it's probably there. Look at that. Wow. Yeah. Loves reading.
Yes.
Wow, do I? I didn't think I did. I'm amazing.
They don't give you all the information, but if you give them, then you get it all.
Have you written this down? Because I'm going to be using this in my practice.
That's nice. That's
very soon.
That's pretty. I didn't see too many inaccuracies in there, so that's pretty scary.
I have a comment. It occurs to me. Somebody said privacy is dead. Mm-hmm. Maybe we're better off if privacy is dead, that it'll change human personality. Think how much effort that we put into basically pretending to be something that we aren't. For instance, with status symbols. If everybody can look up on the internet and see exactly what your net worth is, then you don't have to buy a fancy car to pretend to be richer than you are. If everybody knows that everybody else does have a sex life and does weird things, then you don't have to hide it anymore. There'll be certain criminal activities that'll happen, but maybe human personality will just change when there is no more personality. I've always heard that in small villages there's less crime because everybody knows everybody. So I'm not too worried about privacy being dead. You know, so, now there's probably a dozen people here who can give me examples of why it's a real serious problem, but I think it might be positive also.
Well, I had a specific event in my life where every detail of everything that I had done as a child and all the way up to the time that the case came up in court was dragged out to describe my personality, to talk about me being a fraudster and that being an essential component into the state of mind for the case, my criminal case, by the way, that I've talked about here at past Dragon Cons. And at that moment actually changed me, because once I saw that everything was out in the open and my head didn't explode and my life wasn't over at that point, I became a lot less protective of what I do. I actually became much more public as a result of that. So maybe it takes those sort of formative things. I mean, I guess I can go both ways. You can also have an event that's really bad that things are being revealed and form an opinion for a long time about all these privacy issues. So yeah, good input. Thanks.
You were forced into that.
Yeah.
You had no choice.
Right.
There's a lot of folks who do have a choice and don't want to give that up.
Yeah.
Having no privacy describes East Germany.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Full of forests also describes East Germany, so.
There was a story last year about a college professor that forced their students to have a Facebook account to participate in the class. That's the other side of the coin that I'm worried about, when you're forced to.
Well, I would post the most innocuous stuff. I wouldn't give anything. Sometimes when they ask for my birth date on these things that require you to give them a birth date, I have a couple of wrong birth dates that I use. Yeah, I use a different birth date. But it's one that I can remember or that I keep in my little log of passwords.
You use KeePass, and I keep track of all those answers. Yeah, and when they ask you what your mother's name, and one site's potato, the next one's radish, the next one's turnip, you know, I lie on all of them.
Yeah, those challenge questions, you should never really give them the true answers, because the true answers are actually obvious things that a lot of people don't know about. Where'd you meet your wife? Well, you know, I know most people I know where I met my wife.
That's how they got into Sarah Palin.
Yeah.
But that was just kind of social engineering almost. Somebody sat down and rationally figured out what would be the answers to these questions, and they did figure it. It wasn't any sophisticated hacking. I don't think it was just rationality.
Oh, no. It's like looking at Facebook and seeing that they went to the same high school together, and they went, well, they've been together a long time. We know that from the media.
Well, I bet they meant it for high school.
Yeah, but you could come up with a, I'm sure somebody could program a thing that would cull through the databases and say, you know, try to find answers to questions to things like that. I mean, it could be automated. It could be made into a...
I was going to say something, hearkening back to something we had said before and then related to this Spokio thing. When you're talking about when you go for a job and people will Google you to check out your background and things like that, and how easy you were to find. And did you know that there were all those other Randall Schwartzes with one L's all over? Oh, you already did. Well, do you know them?
I Google my name a lot.
Oh, okay.
Well, I wonder what people are saying about me. That's all.
But I mean, if you've got a relatively uncommon name, you're easy to Google. If you're Dave Smith, like, either bosses aren't going to even bother Googling you, or you're going to get blamed for a lot of stuff that other Dave Smiths have done.
Yeah, there's a theory of it's not really cryptography, but a theory of you hide secret information. Maybe it is cryptography. You hide secret information in an overwhelming amount of material.
Steganography.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. That's it. That's the right word.
You hide it in a stegosaurus.
Yeah. You put you put out so much information that they can't find you, and that's what I think of Dave Smith would be. There's so much information out there that finding the particular one would be difficult. For a while, I had an add-on to my Firefox browser that would just make all these Google queries with random words and things, so that if anybody ever looked at what I queried on Google, they'd have a hard time figuring out what I asked for because it had, but it just tied up the machine. You know, you'd see all these little, it distracted me, these all these little queries, elephant shoes, you know, at the bottom of the screen it would search for. And Well, you try. But they'd have to go through all of them to find. They could have a dictionary and they just compared a bunch of words to find the one that. Now, I decided to turn it off because I make longer queries. My queries are really long sentences because I find I get better results that way. Just to doing a word or two, you get a universe of things that you know that they make fun of on Bing's ads. You know.
Do you remember what that add-on was called?
I beg pardon? The add-on? No, I'm afraid I don't. It was for Firefox 2. I don't know if they still do it on 3.
Yeah, the as far as to the gentleman's point on a world where privacy doesn't really exist, there's a really good book, Arthur C. Clarke and Stephen Baxter, called The Light of Better Days. You've read that?
Yes, it speaks directly to the point.
They create, it's science fiction, but it's along the same lines. They create a consumer-grade device that allows people to open wormholes pretty much anywhere they want and see anything, and everybody's got them, and they're undetectable, so there's no more secrets. And it's really interesting because he talks about the way society evolves and deals with that. Naturally, marriages don't do that transition very well.
Yeah, you mentioned, the fellow here mentioned about living in small villages and there's less crime. Well, partly they're also much more polite because people know where you sleep.
Yeah.
I lived on submarines for many years. You can't escape if you've ticked somebody off. So you don't tick them off.
Yeah, you can't wait outside or anything. It's still
my great-grandfather wrote a book on dueling, which I read, and one of the comments of all the old duelists, this was after it had been outlawed, is people were much more polite when we had dueling.
So we're just going to get rid of privacy and allow dueling again, and everybody is going to carry around guns and knives?
Mandatory firearms. Yes.
It's a Tea Party dream. There we go.
How's that different than now? Have you looked at Dragon Con? I mean, who doesn't have a knife or a gun?
Me.
Now we know who to kill.
There's one behind you on the desk. Just pick one up.
Yeah. Oh, no, I just don't.
We are the victims.
Oh, never mind.
Fast, they raised their hands.
I'm so confused.
What's happening?
Now, I think overall for Facebook type of applications, everybody just really needs to remember, if there's information that you would choose not to be made public, then don't do it. With what's happening industrialized and losing our privacy across the board, Big Brother, I mean, you as a hospital director are aware of what's happening in the medical field, where now everything's becoming, electronic medical records. I can go to the doctor in New York City and my records are now available if I'm in Hawaii the next week. That's you know, at what point does Big Brother get all of that access and can start making determinations on, you know what, that guy over there, he's got a disease that's going to kill him in another 2 weeks, but in the meantime, let's go ahead and draft him. We can send him out to Iraq, get some good damage done. You know, I mean, there's a lot of scary things that are associated with that.
Facebook aside and the government, corporations aside, one of the big problems with privacy is now us. Everybody in this room's probably got something like this. And if anything interesting happens, it hits the internet instantly. Mm-hmm. So even if it's not some megacorp or evil empire, we're kind of doing it to ourselves.
Of course, there's a plus side to that too, though. When because everything is almost instantaneous, it's hard to hide things or cover things up, and it's easier for information to get out. We're talking about China in another session, and although China shuts down some things, and although some government shut down text messaging when they don't want things to get out, Iran does that. Before they get a chance to actually shut it off, all these messages go out. Like the woman that was killed in an Iranian demonstration and became a cause celeb on the internet, that was taken with a camera phone and, you know, sent on, posted right away. And so the news, in some ways, there's a plus side to the instantaneous, everybody carrying around their phone that can take pictures and post to the net.
That's amazing.
I'm sorry?
That's amazing.
Yeah.
I don't think privacy's dead. I think it's changing. And I think that your point is valid. We all have an instant broadcast medium in our pockets. And my privacy's changed because I also teach at a university. And for the longest time, I made the decision not to ever let them know that I go to Dragon Con because there are some conservatives in my classes. And it's not always understood. So for the longest time, I just went ahead and kept everything private. And then I decided when I came here, I'm showing my family and my friends outside all the pictures and stuff I'm doing. I said, you know what, one of these kids is going to find it one of these days. So I finally just put it on my webpage, my Twitter feed, and they can watch it. I let them know straight up. It becomes part of the lecture. So I've changed a little bit about the transparency, but there's still some opacity there. There's some things that are never going to make it into my social streams, whatever they are. But I have had to acknowledge that technology has changed the way that we're living our lives. I hope we never get to the point where we all have to wear white suits and live our lives identically, because we have no secrets. But by the same token, I have to also respect and keep up with, I think there's a sort of a social responsibility to be aware. And what I'm scared of is all the people who are not aware of how privacy is changing, and they're just going with the flow, because those are the ones who are going to get hurt or cause somebody else to get hurt.
You know, there's an old saying that your mother or grandmother would say, don't ever do anything you don't want to see on the front page of the newspaper tomorrow. Well, of course, since the newspapers are all dying and disappearing, we don't have much of a concern anymore. But I guess the internet's replaced that. But I mean, that's been around for a long time. You know, it's Schmidt's comment about if you don't want people to know about it, don't do it. It takes a lot of the fun out of life.
Anything you don't want retweeted.
Yeah.
Or YouTube.
YouTube is really the more scary one. Actually, I see the picture of it.
I remember visiting Williamsburg, Virginia. If you haven't gone, it's really cool, and it shows how they lived about the time of the Revolution. And that one of the comments I had in one of the hotels, it was just this big room, and people would have like little sleeping pads on the floor, and everybody be sharing the same room. And there was this one guy who was a gunslinger, and what he was renowned for was there was another guy sleeping on the floor in the same room who snored really loud, so he shot him. Now they just take your picture and post it on, or a video and post it on YouTube. So they're doing the same things, they're just not killing you. So maybe we're getting better. Maybe.
This may or may not be an improvement.
As part of the military intel oversight process, you'd be surprised how much protections there are from a military perspective on what we can and cannot view from U.S. persons data. And so there's quite a lengthy oversight process from the Director of National Intelligence, and then federal law that keeps us from viewing certain types of data, and a fairly significant process for making sure that we don't view that kind of data as well. Posse Comitatus Act, specifically talks about not doing law enforcement within the continental U.S. from a military perspective. And it even, you know, for folks who live outside the U.S. But are still U.S. citizens, that's still a constraint from a military intelligence perspective as well. And so a lot of folks get real weirded out by, you know, the military doing intelligence, but there are a lot of protections built in to keep that from happening. And the
I know this is probably true for the military, but of course then there's the FBI and the local police and the NSA and others that, you know, well, isn't across the board. But then again, we want them to find the terrorist and, you know, on the plane.
Sure, and the difficulty with that a lot of people don't realize is that how law enforcement gets their funding is by how well they're able to prosecute criminals. And the difficulty is with a lot of competing law enforcement agencies, they don't always necessarily want to share information with other law enforcement agencies because that'll make other law enforcement agencies better than they are. And so within the continental U.S., that becomes a difficulty for information sharing. And so when folks ask us, well, why do you have things like 9/11 difficulties and from an intel perspective happen, it's because of that, you know, people guarding their rice bowls and competition levels. And so, you know, there's no big brother, you know, one, you know, ring to rule them all kind of thing from a law enforcement perspective, at least. And that's that, you know, while that, you know, is makes it difficult, it also is a nice added level of protection.
Maybe what we need to do is to give a financial incentive to MySpace and Facebook and Twitter to root out the terrorists in society, you know, and they can let them have at it. The big concern, of course, is the mistakes that are made.
Facebook in charge than the government?
Huh? I beg your pardon?
Are you going to have Facebook in charge than the government? Some days.
Yeah, some days, yeah. I'd rather have than a bureaucrat. Bureaucrats really scare me because then they sort of proceed mindlessly. If there's a monetary value to it, then maybe my libertarian side kicks in and I go, you know, I can support that, you know, because give them a financial penalty if they make a mistake, you know, so that they don't you have it balanced. As it is right now, the government makes a mistake, you're on the no-fly list, you know, you're screwed. You get searched every time. You know, how do you get off that list?
You don't.
Yeah.
Ever. There is a myth apparently floating around you can. Unfortunately, nobody's ever successfully done it, I don't think. Yeah, the interesting thing is that I hear lots and lots of debates like this where people are saying, what should we do? How should we do it? And what's the government doing? And what can't they do? And what can the hackers do? And what can't they do? In the meantime, that process is very slow and messy and high noise to signal ratio. And in the meantime, the criminals are going, there's a site where you can go and it tells you if somebody's home or not. So you can go rob their house. So are you saying, hey, I'm at the mall, meet me at the food court, and they go, and go to a site like you just showed a minute ago, and they say, oh, he lives there, he'll be gone for 4 hours. Yeah, we can clean him out. They're doing that. And so they're saying, y'all go over to the corner over there and argue about it, we're going to clean out your house.
Well, they did that in a low-tech way by posting, when you post weddings and funerals.
Yeah,
yeah,
yes.
They'd go rob the house while the person was off at either the wedding or the funeral.
Big shock, I'm the head of my neighborhood watch. And one of the things we do is when somebody has a funeral or a wedding, we get somebody who's associated with the family and a friend, but not necessarily going to the event, to sit their house for that very reason.
Yeah.
There's somebody's tweet, I'm on vacation, I'm gonna return July 4th.
Okay, so I guess to end this, wrap it up, just greatly don't have any expectations of privacy.
Adjust your attitudes.
Right.